Welcome to The Ultimate Guide to Partnering. In this podcast, Vince Menzione, a proven industry sales and partner executive, brings together technology leaders in this forum to discuss transformational trends and to deconstruct successful strategies to thrive and survive in the rapid age of cloud transformation. And now your host, Vince Menzione.
Welcome to The Ultimate Guide to Partnering. This is a very special episode of the podcast, as my guest is a personal friend, a Microsoft partner, and someone who has overcome adversity in his life to come to the United States, build a business, and now deliberately lives an outstanding life. You see, my guest for this episode of the podcast is Mariano Della Donne. Mariano grew up in a small town in Argentina, escaped poverty in an early age, excelled in swimming, and used that as a vehicle to come to the U.S. and live the American dream. He built a business and then transformed that business to a cloud solution provider specifically focused on the law enforcement market and serving communities nationwide. In this episode, we discussed Adveno's transformation from a traditional SI model, their current value proposition in law enforcement, and provide a primer for partners looking to learn more about this market and the evolution of technology to solve for 21st century law enforcement. Mariano's personal journey is a story of hope, adaptability, and perseverance that I hope you find inspirational and enjoying. Mariano, welcome to the podcast. I am so excited to have you here today to join us on our podcast, and just great to have you. Welcome.
Thank you, Vince. I'm glad to be here.
You know, you and I have known each other for several years. You were one of the first partners that reached out to me when I first joined Microsoft to offer advice and to reach out and support me. And, you know, our relationship is built over the years, I would call a strong friendship, as well as the fact that we have evolved together. And you have a very interesting story about your business and your value proposition that I thought would be very compelling for our listeners to share how you transformed your company, since we do talk about transformation here on the podcast. So tell us a little bit about Adventos.
Absolutely. Well, Adventos got started as a services firm. We were initially a Microsoft partner focused on industry solutions, specifically to the public sector. But over the years and with the cloud, and our work and affinity to public safety, we realized that an important pivot was necessary. We needed to become a software as a service solution provider to public safety companies or agencies. And we built a solution called SmartForce, which was really the focal point of our pivot and the ability to deliver solutions to the customer at a much lower cost, with a much more impactful scale, and being able to, because of the power of software and people, deliver much more value to the organizations that we serve. So Adventos, originally an SI or systems integrator that basically cut its teeth, learned about public safety, public sector by doing services, and then saw a better way to deliver solutions as a software company, as a software as a service company.
Help our listeners understand that journey a little bit in a little bit more detail, right? So you started the company as an SI, and we'll talk a little bit more about your professional journey in a little bit here. But what was the inflection point for you to then take the company into a different direction?
Yeah, so I think it was born out of opportunity and necessity. I think and systems integrations business is a very valuable business. But the reality is that it's very hard to make it scale because you're really dependent on people on both ends of the spectrum, your customers and your employees. And while we are people driven, scaling people can be problematic. So we realized that that was the nascent pain in a way. But then from an opportunity perspective, what we saw was, okay, here's a new medium to deliver solutions. It's the cloud. Here's companies like Microsoft providing amazing amount of security services at very low cost that we can plug into. And we can take all that we've learned from being an SI and put it into a software solution that gives us infinite scale, where with the cloud and our software and our people, we can really have a deeper impact into the lives of public safety. And so it was really about the pain of not being able to scale effectively. Many SI companies scale very well, but not all get there. And the opportunity in terms of a new delivery method for intellectual property, for workflows, for software, et cetera, that we did find with the change over from, you know, on-premise software to software as a service.
So tell our listeners a little bit about your value proposition in law enforcement and public safety. Why is it that organizations choose Adventos?
Yeah, so the value proposition is that we are an integrated platform for law enforcement to conduct business, whether it's crime reduction, whether it's streamlining administrative processes or connecting with the community, or even reducing their risk using force-less handling complaints, commendations at the department level with much more efficiency, et cetera. So being integrated, an end-to-end platform is really the value proposition. How we differentiate, or what is it that we do differently? If you are a police department, you're typically operating very much from call to service to report writing at the incident level. And that's what's called committed time. And what we realized in the marketplace was for all the uncommitted time, for the space that the officer is not responding to a call for service, there's all these workflows, all these business processes, all the activities that they can do that have impact in the communities that they serve. And that's the sweet spot that we help. We're very much focused on helping with an agency management approach for police departments, sheriffs, public safety organizations through SmartForce, the software solution that we provide.
So what does that look like, the uncommitted time, and what those law enforcement officers do during that time?
Great question. So very good departments tend to want to maximize that uncommitted time in a way that gets the officers out in the community, that helps them with specific crime reduction strategies that they may have. There may be a problem area in the city or the county, and they want to deploy resources very effectively to that hotspot or that crime pattern or that problem location and bring crime down. So the uncommitted time is really an opportunity for the agency to be more proactive and to do things that are community relevant and connecting them to the community. So then they can have even less committed time because there's less calls for service or less incidents that they have to react to as opposed to being proactive with.
So I've heard the term 21st century policing. Does this fall into that category?
Yeah, 21st century policing came out of the prior administration's effort to help modernize policing initiatives. And it was about 150-point assessment and recommendations as to what is a 21st century policing strategy look like? How are they with the community? What do they do internally in terms of policies and training of officers? How do they respond to crisis, et cetera? So 21st century policing, very much so. Now, having said that, the reality is that most police departments share a lot of standardized approaches, but also they're very dependent on the community that they serve. High net worth community with property crimes is going to be very different than a community that maybe has low income, more crime, or they have a drug problem. So really, it's very much about what the community needs are, and the best police departments out there, they're really adapting, adjusting, they're flexing with their communities, and they're in partnership with their communities. So so they provide the right level of service for them.
So how's technology playing a role here? We have a lot of listeners here that are new to law enforcement. Could you talk to our listeners about the opportunities for partners and technology companies in the law enforcement space? How do you bucketize that?
Yeah, so it's a huge space. There's a lot of opportunities. It's a space that you have to be fully committed to. So I would not recommend anyone to just see it as a big market and then jump in, just because the key to be successful is to really lock in hands with the customer and understand their daily lives and their pain points and their intricacies. But there's opportunities all across the technology spectrum, from devices and hardware. Many police departments are trying to bring more hardware to their officers, whether it's body-worn cameras, cell phones or smartphones, computers in their patrol car, tablets for investigations, all the way to software solutions like Adventos provides with SmartForce that give the officer back more time, that reduce the risk of doing business, provides more officer safety, all the way to data analytics, big data, machine learning, translation, and also I think, you know, the more newer technologies like drones and unmanned vehicles and all these things that sometimes seem a little bit sci-fi, but the reality is that when deployed correctly, they can save lives, they can improve the quality of law enforcement, and they can help us all as citizens and community members to be more safe.
So technology's been around law enforcement for quite some time now. I believe it was Motorola that first introduced a computer-aided dispatch terminal in a police car. What can you tell us now, especially with the advent of the cloud and other technologies that you discussed, what's happening in law enforcement? Where are the new opportunity areas?
So, yeah, that's a great time period because, yeah, it's funny. I think it's maybe 50 years ago, it was radios. Then it was mobile data terminals to get the officers dispatched correctly. And then a little bit of a gap, records, just incident recording. And now it's just an explosion of technology. And 2-3 years ago, I think law enforcement was not as ready for the cloud as they are today. Today, law enforcement is very, very thirsty for solutions that are low cost, low complexity, and that provide a very rapid value add to the department. So that's where the cloud really comes into play and allows departments to turn on services, turn on capabilities that before it would have been cost prohibitive for them to have or too complex to deploy and consume that information and solve problems within their department that, again, before it would have taken just too much of a capital expenditure for them to be able to do.
So where do you see the growth?
So our growth is directly focused on law enforcement. I believe that we can still do a lot more in terms of market share and customer acquisition and working with our customers more deeply to solve even more of their problems within their agencies. I think we do so much for them today, but I think there's still a lot more value that we can give them and provide them through our software. After that, most likely we'll be connecting the police department to fire, EMS, the city, schools, etc. So our solution will be additive in terms of its impact that it can have with law enforcement partners. So very much focused on law enforcement and then the partners, the community, the partners that they have out there when they're fighting crime.
So I'm a police chief. We get into an elevator together and I hit the button and I turn to you and say, so why should I choose Adventos?
So I would say we can integrate your operations, save you time, keep your officers safer, and help you reduce crime.
And how do you do that?
So the power of people and software, one of the things that we never want to get ahead of people. So I truly believe in the power of people and software. First of all, the department and its people need to be ready to adopt technology and wanting to deploy technology with a very specific purpose to reduce crime, to keep its officers safe, to connect with the community, etc. The software then does the work of streamlining how they do that, of giving them paths to share information real time as opposed to having to place a radio call or go back to the office. So the software really is there to reinforce the good work that the officer is doing and is providing them with a tool and a mechanism to get that information out real time and then see more information that is relevant to them to where they're at. So to give you an example, if they're patrolling downtown and now there is a particular project or operation that they need to be running to reduce crime in that hotspot, they can all be coordinated. They can all collaborate. All the officers, drug enforcement, detectives, investigators, etc., they can all be in the same operational picture of what's happening in the field all the way to command, again, because of the power of software. So they're still doing the traditional policing. Now they're aided by a software tool that gives more transparency, more accountability, more speed, et cetera.
So when is a law enforcement agency ready for Adventos? Is there an ideal customer profile, a size of an account that you follow when you target your market?
So yeah, right now the ideal agency is between 25, 50 officers up. Smaller agencies may have and difficulty with how the solution, how big the solution is. The solution is very comprehensive. After 50 officers, I think they're of a size where they're perfectly aligned and it's enough complexity in their own operations that then the software eliminates that complexity, that the software simplifies their lives. So I would say everyone, but the reality is that agencies that have a little bit over 25 officers are probably best positioned to take advantage of our software. And there's many of them. There's about 19,000 police departments in the U.S., 33,000 fire departments, 49,000 municipal governments, and many other public safety type entities. And so there's several thousand police departments. Most likely a listener listening in today is being served and protected by a police department that has at least 50 officers.
That's quite a big market. Where do you see Adventos 3 to 5 years from now?
So for us, there's measured growth commensurate to customer success. I think in this market, we cannot be thinking about growth for the sake of growth. I think this is a market where references matter tremendously, and customer success really is what paves the way for you to be able to grow. So we're very focused on making the customer successful first, so then we can be rewarded with more growth. And ultimately, I believe that we can be a very large company, very integrated into the lives of our customers and public safety, and also, again, helping emergency management services, fire, schools, cities, large venues, and we're connecting them all together on a platform that helps them be more efficient and be safer as well when they operate.
You mentioned several other technologies a little bit earlier in the podcast, computer-aided dispatch solutions, body-worn cameras, some of the other more advanced technologies that are emerging with the cloud. Does the Adventos solution interact with those other solutions? How do you see your role with these other technologies?
Yeah, so today we have the privilege of not having to integrate with them, which that translates into the customer not having to spend a lot of money or time worrying about integration points. And because what we do in essence is net new to the customer are things that before they used to do maybe on paper or over the radio or with a system that was homegrown, again, they can quickly adopt our capabilities. Our goal is to be complementary to those solutions. With technology, you never know. Things change so rapidly. But right now, in an ideal environment, the customer has a great computer-aided dispatch 911 system. They have a great records system, which is integrated with the dispatch system. So that's where the officer writes the incident. And then they're using our agency management solution, SmartForce, for all the proactive policing initiatives, crime reduction, administrative processes, et cetera. So I see us working together in that sense, not necessarily having to integrate. Integration points are expensive for the customer, for the solution provider, et cetera. Now, I think it's blue sky, blue ocean in terms of what happens with wearable devices, body-worn cameras, technology in the cars, drones, et cetera. Those technologies most likely will have to feed the AMS or the CAD and RMS system. So there will be integration points with hardware and software. But right now, it seems like the perfect agency would have potentially body-worn cameras. They're not for everyone, but potentially they would have that. They obviously need a 911 system, then records management, and an agency management software.
So your company has had a great relationship with Microsoft over the years, first as a systems integrator working on SharePoint, and then now as a turnkey solution provider in law enforcement and public safety. What do you think makes a great partner?
It's a little bit of a cliche, but it's a win-win. So the reason that we've been, I think, good partners to Microsoft is because we've been adaptable, flexible, nimble. So there's been times where we saw an opportunity to help Microsoft, but also to help our customers, and we jumped on it. So if there's a program within Microsoft, for example, that is aimed at doing more work in public safety, we would creatively envision how we use that program so we can bring value to our customer and we can bring value to Microsoft. And as a result of that, also we get value. So I think when working with large companies, the key really is you are the nimble, flexible, adaptable player. And sometimes you can see opportunities to solve problems with your customers and with Microsoft. And if you take advantage of that, that's where the partnership can be powerful.
So you've been exposed to quite a few partners in the Microsoft partner ecosystem over the years. Was there a situation where you saw a partner try to partner with Microsoft and fail? And what did you think at that time? And what would you tell them now if you could?
Yeah, I think couple of things. One is whether it's Microsoft or whether it's a small coffee retailer somewhere in a street corner, it's human beings and interaction between humans. I think sometimes when people approach big companies, they miss the compassion component and the human component, and they think that this big corporate machine will have all the resources in the world and you know, what's in it for me. So you have to remember that you're dealing with human beings with their own motivations, goals, personal lives, etc. Operating maybe in the context of a big corporation or in a small entity, but at the end of the day, we're all humans. So never forgetting that and really just focusing on solving human problems, solving people problems. As opposed to just getting down to, okay, let's build this big, long-running program. That would be my second recommendation is Microsoft tends to reorganize very often. And so you have to build programs that are short-lived and powerful if you are going to depend on the program to be there forever most likely you're going to maybe overinvest in it and then be disappointed when the program goes away, or underinvest in it and not take advantage of that aggressive program that is in place only for a specific period of time. And then the corporate goals will change with the market environment as they need to. So I would say focus on the people aspects of things, solving problems for people, and then don't bet the farm on, you know, the partnership being there forever. Just really be agile in being able to get in, add value, get out, come back in when there's another opportunity to add value, and then just flex with the times.
That's some really great advice for our listeners. Does Advanos have any other partnerships outside of the Microsoft Alliance? And can you take our listeners through that?
Yeah, no, we are right now, Microsoft is our primary technology partner. As we grow, we're looking at channel opportunities and other partnerships that, again, represent the lives of our customers. You know, the devices that they use, the software that they need, how they consume information, et cetera. So our partnerships will most likely increase over time. But right now, we are primarily focused on the Microsoft government cloud. And that is because not only they've been a great partner to us, but also Microsoft has a point of differentiation in their cloud, which is they have gone through many states and signed what's called CJIS addendums, or Criminal Justice Information Systems addendums, where they've worked with the state chief security officer to agree on how the security of their cloud is run. And for law enforcement, security, as you could imagine, is a big deal. So having that level of, that extra level of reassurance is important to our customers and to us.
Is it different doing business with a government agency or entity than it is for dealing with a commercial account? And can you take our listeners through that difference?
Yeah, the reality is that procurement at a government entity is going to be maybe more problematic than procurement at the small and medium-sized business space. It will probably be similar to procurement with a large corporation, where you have to be set up as a vendor and, you know, maybe certify a number of things, et cetera. But in our case, we're lucky in that we're not doing requests for proposals or requests for information or anything like that. Our software is so unique and is priced appropriately that we are able to just, you know, go direct to the customer.
So you don't have to go, they don't have to go for multiple bids as you typically see.
Right.
Right. And then there's something else I know out there, sole source justification that is sometimes required if it's a unique solution. Is that the case for you?
Right. Yeah. Oh yeah. So sometimes it's a sole source, and sometimes it's maybe even just looking at how two or three other departments nearby purchased the software, and then they just realized, okay, we're going to follow suit. And since they sole source, we can also sole source.
So before we shift gears here on your personal and professional journey, is there any other advice you have for our listeners on partnering with Microsoft?
Yeah, on partnering with Microsoft, what I would say is there's so many opportunities. Again, Microsoft has, like any company, has needs and resources that could do more or could be more efficient, et cetera. So view Microsoft as a partner that can come along in your journey. And as long as you're providing value to your customers in the process, you can both benefit. So never forget to do something for the sake of your customer, because that's going to be business building for you. And that's going to align you the best with Microsoft.
So as you know from listening to other episodes of this podcast, I like to focus a portion of the episode on the personal and professional journey. And you and I have known each other for a decade now. And I know for a fact that you have a very, very interesting story about how you came here to this country,
your career development and so on. And I'm hoping that you can share that with our listeners.
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't know if you want to start at the beginning, but I do know a little bit about your story coming to the United States. Is that a good place for us to start?
Yeah, so let's start there. You may detect this Texas accent from me, but I'm
South Texas.
That's right. I'm originally from Argentina. So my story sort of goes like this. I grew up in the Patagonia region of Argentina, a state called Rio Negro, an area that resembles Wyoming, Montana, Colorado. I live in Colorado now, in Denver, Colorado. And at age 12, there was a difficult situation with my father that my mom and I escaped. And I made a determination at that point that I was going to study hard and I was going to swim hard. I was a swimmer and come to the United States and go to college. That was my ticket out of my circumstances. So I swam hard. I studied hard. I, through a series of events, I ended going to South Africa first, before coming to the U.S., where I applied for colleges and wrote letters to coaches, etc. I was subsequently recruited by Arizona State University. My mom sells her car at the time, so I have one semester worth of college tuition, room and board, and I have to swim and get a scholarship or go back to Argentina. Luckily, the University of Denver gives me a full scholarship. I become the swim team captain. I become an NCAA All-American in Division II at the University of Denver. And then DU transitioned to Division I program. I saw that transition happen during my years at the college. I graduated with a biochemistry degree, but during that time, I did a lot of programming and what's called dry chemistry, computational chemistry. I was working for the dean of the chemistry department at the time, and he didn't have a lab, but he had computers, and we were running simulations, etc. And I did a master's in information technology. I sort of crammed all that with as much scholarship money as I could. So I graduated in like 3 years and a quarter, and then I used 2/4 of my scholarship for my master's. And I met the love of my life in college. I'm married to her. We have 2 beautiful children. And then my professional career began. One thing that I didn't share in the personal story is that my uncle was a pretty elite police officer and then police executive in Argentina for the state police. He introduced things like SWAT and canine dogs and whatnot. So growing up, I sort of saw him as a source of strength and valor and inspiration. He was human and not perfect like all of us are. He's an imperfect human being like all of us are. But growing up, I saw that as an example. So then when I started my professional career, every time we did my first job was really with a large consulting firm born out of a large consulting firm and a large technology company. And I did a lot of work in both the private sector and public sector, bringing technology solutions to these customers. And as I did that, every time I encounter a public safety entity organization, the quality of the product was better, the profit was higher, the affinity to what they were doing and their mission was great. And that's what led me to then start my own consulting firm and then pivot into a software service solution that today is very focused on this particular customer, law enforcement. So a little bit of my personal background has to do with why today, you know, 20 years later or so, I'm doing work and helping the men and women in blue.
So I want to peel back here a little bit. Your mom had to sell her car so you could afford a semester at college. And then you had to essentially sell yourself in order to get a college scholarship. Take our listeners through that a little bit.
Well, so it was scary, obviously. and stressful times, because I definitely wanted a better future than what I had had. And I felt like I could swim really fast and I had the right grades, et cetera, to be here in the United States. And also after being an immigrant, growing up in a remote area of Argentina and then being in the U.S., you kind of fall in love with the way of life of the U.S. and the freedom and so many things that are just great about this country. So I started making cold calls, and I cold-called a few coaches, but I got on the second ring the coach of the University of Denver. He had been there for like 33 years. His name is Jim Bain. I'm forever grateful to him. And he asked me what I swam. I told him my times. He said that he was looking for a backstroker. I said, I am a backstroker. At that point, I could be any stroke that you wanted me to. And he gave me a full scholarship right there on the phone. It was a little bit of a negotiation. It was first three quarters of a scholarship. And I said, how much is the University of Denver? I think at the time it was like $24,000 a year. I said, well, I need a full scholarship. And he's like, okay, you got it. And Jim Bain have remained friends. I've had the privilege with my wife and a few other swimmers to endow a scholarship in his name. So today, other people like me back in the day that merit a scholarship but don't have the means can have a scholarship at the DU swim program. So
that's a great story. And I'm sure you would have been a butterfly swimmer if he had been looking for a butterfly swimmer at the time.
Yeah, I was kind of glad that it was backstroke. You get to breathe more. And I was good at backstroke. I just didn't want to be a breaststroker.
Yeah. So you talked a little bit about getting involved in IT. What was it that got you out of the big corporate world and on to being an entrepreneur? Was there some seminal event or an inflection point that caused you to go in that direction?
I think I had always been entrepreneurial. When I was a teenager, before going to South Africa, I needed money to buy the ticket and have some spending money. So I cleaned water tanks in Argentina and I mowed lawns. And it's weird to picture a water tank, but in Argentina, you're not connected directly to the water source. You have a water tank that is on top of your house. And then from there, you feed the house water. Well, the lid breaks and there's spaces in the tank and it gets pretty dirty. So I would get a stair climb up, drain it, brush it, clean it, use some Clorox, disinfect it, etc. And so I was always a tinker with businesses. I think my mom had a beehive business where I built the hives and all that stuff. So I've always been entrepreneurial and had a desire to be on my own. And I think after I felt like I had learned enough about technology, management, business development, et cetera, I saved some money. My wife at the time had good employment and we were living simply. So I started my own consulting firm. I sort of just jumped in with both feet. And that was a great experience, and that's what led to where we are today.
What was the best piece of advice you received when you got started?
You know, that's a good question. There's been so much that has been good and fruitful, et cetera. I don't know if I can pinpoint anything in particular other than just go for it, learn, adapt, adjust. One of the things that I did and I still do is I rely heavily on advisors, mentors, people that have gone before me and have achieved levels of success that I want to achieve. And again, that could be in life, in fitness, in health, in business, etc. So I don't know if there's one specific point that I can recall, but I know that I leaned into a lot of people that helped me along the way and a lot of people are still helping me today.
Some people would refer to that as a mastermind organization. I'm a big fan of Napoleon Hill and his book, Think and Grow Rich. And, you know, he talks about the mastermind and the power of the mastermind.
That's right. That's right. And I think the key with something like that is to always be true to yourself, meaning there can be someone that is very passionate about advice that they're giving you, and it may make a lot of sense, but from your perspective, the time is not now, or if the time is not ideal, or yes to it when such and such thing happens. So what I would say is always stay true to your core values and beliefs, because being in business, being a CEO of a company, you have to make 1,000 decisions a day. You have to be thinking about the past, the future, the present. And there's just a lot of complexity to it. So, but at the end of the day, just having your own presence of mind and making decisions that you know are right once you've consulted others are probably the key to your success. I would say that, again, tap people for their experience, but never give away your power in a way in decision making where you're reliant on somebody else and what they've done as the source of your decision.
What do you think is your best attribute or skill, and how does it serve you in business?
So I think I'm very adaptable. I think I'm able to adapt quickly to a changing environment and situation. And at the same time, I can persevere. I swam for 17 years competitively. So that was a long focus career in swimming. I see myself doing the same in business. It's going to be longer. I don't see why, I ever wouldn't be in business. But I think sustained effort with the ability to adapt and change course, that's key. Because ultimately in life, you take action and then you get a result, you get an outcome. And that result is good or bad or indifferent. And then you adjust course and you take action again. So just being able to make those adjustments along the way and having the sustained perseverance and effort to make sure that you see that change take place. Because there's times where you feel like you're not making a lot of progress, even though you're adjusting and you're making changes and you're improving, et cetera. So sometimes progress, when you're in the middle of it, seems hard to come by. But when you stay through it and when you see it through it, then you can trace back and say, okay, well, yeah, that was meaningful. That was impactful. That was the right thing to do. And I'm glad that I made those decisions back then.
I know you've talked to groups about a big swimming event you did. I don't know, it was swimming a major river in Argentina. Can you take our listeners through that story?
Yeah, sure. So there's a river in my hometown and that runs through the state. It's called Rio Negro. The state is called Rio Negro, or the province is called Rio Negro, and the river is called Rio Negro. And when I was 17 years old, before I left to go to South Africa and then come to the U.S., my mom was diagnosed with breast cancer. And she had to go to a city outside of the state where the river begins to get a mammogram done. And so there was no mammogram machine in the state that I grew up on. And I saw it as a very important thing to do, is to ensure that women's health was something that was, was better funded and whatnot. So when I was in college, my sophomore year, I went back to Argentina during winter break, and I swam from Neuquén, which is the city where that river becomes a river in the confluence of two other rivers, all the way to my hometown, which I think in river miles, et cetera, is about 78 miles. I swam with the current down that river to raise funds and awareness for breast cancer and for women's health, et cetera. And it was a lot of fun. There were challenges along the way. Some of them are, we had an escort from the Navy, and they didn't bring any maps. So there were times where the river would veer to the right and left, and there was a little island in the middle or a big island in the middle. And you had to choose, okay, do I go left or do I go right? And sometimes I would go left only to find myself crawling on muddy waters or rocks because the water had gotten so low that I had to just crawl on my belly. And the boats would have to go around and find me somewhere else because they couldn't go through that shallow water. There was a point where I went through a city and they were discarding untreated water waste, and I got sick. There was a time that I'm swimming and all of a sudden I'm being lifted, and it's a whole tree trunk with branches and roots just basically making a switch from underwater to overwater and twisting. And I had to swim over that very quickly. But at the end, I was greeted by like 5,000 people. I was very happy to be done. I wasn't tired, believe it or not, even though it had been about 13 hours of swimming. And I was just, you know, ecstatic to have finished and accomplished that. And I almost felt like, okay, this was actually not that hard. At the end, I think, you know, my imagination thought that it was going to be a lot harder than it actually was.
Sounds like a metaphor for life. And I'm sure there were some interesting instances and challenges you needed to overcome. Is there anything in particular that you can share with our listeners?
Yeah, well, so I think sometimes your biggest fears are in your mind and not in reality. And you go through the pain ahead of yourself. And then when you go through it, you're stronger than you know, you're braver than you know, you're more courageous than when you know. And when you get through it, you, you know, you wish that you didn't worry as much or you didn't, you know, suffer as much in your mind that you just did it.
You know, you mentioned your uncle a little bit earlier as a role model. Were there any other role models that you had, and what did you learn from them?
Yeah, so there's two that come to mind right now. One is a mentor of mine at the University of Denver. His name is Don McCaffrey. I call him the Yoda of technology. He was just an amazing individual. He is an amazing individual. And I always liked his poise and his vision and his bedside manner, in a way, how he approached things and how much he helped students and helped me, et cetera. So being a foreign, you know, student in a new country, he was just a rock. And I could go to him, and he was always someone that I could learn from and leave whatever, whether it was coffee or meeting in his office, et cetera, inspired. And he's helped me through my career. So I've known him for, you know, 20 plus years, and he's still a dear friend. The chairman of our board, Tom Storz, he's also a great influence in my life and someone that I lean into quite a bit. And then I read a lot. So I get a lot of my inspiration from reading things that feed your soul, feed your mind. I read a lot about business, psychology, sociology, you know, anything. I really try to constantly be reading and learning so I can learn from those that spend countless hours writing a book, and then you get the privilege of digesting that in 2 or 3 hours. I think a book is one of the best investments you can make in your education and in yourself.
Is there one book in particular that you've read more than once or have gifted often that you'd recommend to our listeners?
So I think it all depends on the stage of life that you're on, but a book that I read more than once is The Power of the Myth by Joseph Campbell. And it's a great, great book. Right now, the book that I'm gifting the most is called Rules for a Night by Ethan Hawke, the author. And I think the book is illustrated by one of his sons. And it's just a beautifully done book. I recommend it for everyone. And it's a great book to gift because it's relatively short and an easy read, etc. And then right now, Ryan Holiday, Ego is the Enemy. I don't gift that book, but that's a book that I go to often. And then also some spiritual passages and things like that, I tend to read and reread as they come to me and speak to me. But from an inspiration perspective, those are the books. Then there's, I think, a lot of really good business books, the Sales Acceleration Formula, a lot of really good thinking right now in terms of software as a service and what you can do around customer success and driving growth that I think is worth reading and rereading, because in a way it's a new paradigm for delivering software, even though it's been around now for a while. But really the economics of it, the strategy of it, et cetera, is constantly changing and evolving. So I read a lot about that as well.
That's great. And I'm going to ask you for links to some of these that you've mentioned, as well as maybe some of the others that you kind of alluded to, that we'll provide a list for our listeners, especially those who are in the SaaS world and the cloud transformational world. There's a lot of great information there, and I'm sure we can share with our listeners.
Is there one quote that you live your life by or you think of often?
I'll quote my wife, and I don't know where she got it from, but she says, "Don't get mad, get better."
Don't get mad, get better. I like that. I like that.
Yeah.
And
what advice would you give to your 25-year-old self?
Relax.
Relax. And
you want to expand on that a little bit?
Well, as I look back, so at 20, my focus was making it through college without losing my scholarship, and beginning to switch over from being a swimmer and my identity being a swimmer to being a professional. So it was a time of stress. Well, I think I probably would have done the same things and not have to stress so much about them. So the outcomes would have been the same without stressing as much about it. So I was very focused. At age 25, I was starting my career and I wanted to just eat the world. And I don't know if I would give myself any new advice. And again, just take it easy. It's okay. You'll be okay.
Nice.
And if you had a personal billboard, and this is a metaphor actually of, you know, what message you would like to get out broadly to the rest of the world, what would it say on it?
So I write in my journal every day, father, husband, business leader. And I think what that does is that guides my decision making on a day-to-day basis to being a good father, being a good husband, being a good business leader, and eliminating anything that is non-essential to that. So whatever it is that you are trying to achieve, whatever it is that you're focusing on in your life, whatever you want to create, just focus on it mightily and ignore the noise, ignore the pain and difficulty. Use it as information to get better, but just focus very, very mightily into those things. And so my billboard is father, husband, business leader. Just being anchored on those three things has kept me moving in the right direction in life.
That's great. And what I got out of that is just focus on your key objectives, right? Every day.
Right.
Be mindful. That's really great advice for our listeners, Mariano. I know we are coming up on time.
Is there any other advice you would give to someone just starting out or looking for advice on to grow their career?
Well, I would say do it. You have to be in the arena to do it. So, you know, and then once you're in it, simplify, focus on the key essentials of your business. We tend to think too much about too many things that are really not that important. Serving the customer well is important. Making The sale, getting acquiring new customers is important. Leading people with integrity and ethics is important. Quality is important. The financial metrics are important. But then there's a lot of other stuff that it really is noise at the end of the day. So if you're in the arena, if you're in business and you're taking care of your people, your customers, you're minding the numbers and you're focusing on quality, I think you'll be successful. And today we live in a world where we're seeing, you know, so much information and so many things that are, again, just non-essential. Just focus on what's most important to you and your goals and objectives, and you'll create something that is worthwhile.
Great insights for our listeners, Mariano. Thank you so much. It has been just terrific having you on our podcast, both to hear about the business and how it's evolved and how you're growing it and the great work you're doing with law enforcement agencies and the partnering you've done.
And your personal and professional journey as well, and the great insights here for our listeners. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much, Vince. I appreciate the opportunity, and I appreciate you as a friend and as a partner.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of The Ultimate Guide to Partnering with your host, Vince Minzione. Online at ultimateguidetopartnering.com and facebook.com/ultimateguidetopartnering. We'll catch you next time on The Ultimate Guide to Partnering.